G'day you mob, Pete here, and this is another episode of Aussie English, the number one place for anyone and everyone wanting to learn Australian English. So today I have a Goss episode for you where I sit down with my old man, my father, Ian Smithson, and we talk about the week's news, whether locally down under here in Australia or non-locally overseas in other parts of the world, okay? And we sometimes also talk about whatever comes to mind, right? If we can think of something interesting to share with you guys related to us or Australia, we also talk about that in the Goss. So these episodes are specifically designed to try and give you content about many different topics where we're obviously speaking in English and there are multiple people having a natural and spontaneous conversation in English. So it is particularly good to improve your listening skills. In order to complement that, though, I really recommend that you join the podcast membership or the academy membership at aussieenglish.com.au, where you will get access to the full transcripts of these episodes, the PDFs, the downloads, and you can also use the online PDF reader to read and listen at the same time. Okay, so if you really, really want to improve your listening skills fast, get the transcript, listen and read at the same time, keep practicing, and that is the quickest way to level up your English. Anyway, I've been rabbiting on a bit. I've been talking a bit. Let's just get into this episode, guys. Smack the bird, and let's get into it. Dad, what's going on?
Hey, Pete.
What's the goss?
What is going on?
How are you going?
I'm going well. Yeah, the sun's out. What's going on? Today was supposed to be pissing with rain all day, and it rained for 5 minutes this morning, and the sun's been out.
So wasn't that meant to be the forecast for the entire week? It was like 80% chance of rain.
Look, the low pressure system that's sitting over the western side of Bass Strait got stalled, which does happen at this time of the year, and it went north, which happens. So that explained why we got delayed. But it was supposed to keeps being stalled and sit over the top of us, but it's apparently buggered off. So
not complaining.
No, I had a plan a week ago that I was going to go out and do some walking in the local wildlife sanctuary and do some photography. And then I cancelled that today because I thought, no, it's going to be pissing with rain all day, so I'm not going to bother. I'll do something else.
Have they still got wallabies there?
They do. And there's actually a eastern grey kangaroo that's been seen there now too. So
I wonder if you just like have random people who just capture these animals around Australia and then drive to Ocean Grove.
Well, the wallaby's not surprising. It's big enough that it will have had a long-term black wallaby, the swamp wallaby population. But there's also a couple of redneck wallabies, which used to be indigenous to this area. And I suspect they probably don't have a big enough area for them to have a viable population. But but there's a couple of them there that have been there for a while. I haven't seen them recently, but
awesome.
Yeah.
So get your decent dose of macropods.
Yeah, exactly. And mostly birds. And it's wildflower time too. There's lots of little orchids and flowers and stuff around. So I was going to do a month of macro photography, whether that was once a month or 30 times a month. But apparently now it's going to be 30 because I didn't do it on the first. So for those of you who are watching this later, it is when we are recording this, it's the 1st of October. So
that's it'll probably come out in December.
Come out in December. But so what happened to macro month? Didn't do it.
You got to stay up to date. So I've got a story here about Goorey. Previously known as, previously known as Fraser Island. So the world's largest sand island is returning to its first Australian origins, with Fraser Island being renamed Goorey. It's very difficult to work this out. I had to see the actual phonetic spelling because it's K apostrophe G-A-R-I.
Yeah, and that actually, I read the story as well before you sent it, and I have this, and I'd love to, and I will do it. I'll make a little project of mine one day to, next time I'm having a chat to an Indigenous person, as to actually ask them how we determine spelling using the Latin alphabet of Indigenous language. Because if the word is Goorey or Goorey, and it's Goorey.
Well, they have here pronounced, and then in, quotation inverted, marks, Goorey or Goorey.
So why isn't it just spelled G-U-R-R-I? I'm in no way being negative about it, because clearly at some stage Indigenous people have decided this is how we use the Latin language to actually use the subtlety. Because I suspect, and you'll know being multilingual, I'm not, that subtlety in pronunciation of language is often lost to people who are not native speakers of that language. And Kel can't tell the difference between bread and Brad, which you and I hear that as going, they are
light
completely
and day,
different.
Yeah, night and day.
And she can't hear it. And that's, she just simply can't, because the same phonetic sound that we have would be pronounced exactly the same in Portuguese. And so she would hear it as the same thing. And I suspect what's happening here is that there is a subtlety in the pronunciation of this word, that the K apostrophe G means there is a different consonant sound from just putting a G there. And yet for us, it's just curry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I would imagine that it would have been probably one of those gutty early anthropologists that probably wrote this down. And at the time that they would have been interacting with the Butchala people here from Gurry, which was Fraser Island, they wouldn't have had the international phonetic alphabet of the time. So they would have been trying to describe the sounds that they heard using just the, you know, English alphabet. But yeah, that's what I was about to say. I would like, I'd prefer to hear this from an Indigenous person saying the actual word so that I could get an idea of how it actually sounded, instead of having to try and use just English letters to represent it, because you're almost certainly incorrect.
Oh, yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, the World Heritage Committee has already signed off on the renaming, and the state government is finalizing the paperwork after a naming ceremony was held on the island last Sunday, although this would have been a few Sundays ago now. Environment Minister Megan Scanlon.
Oh, no, it was last Sunday. Yeah, no, this is a week and a half old. So,
Two Sundays ago. Megan Scanlon, who attended the ceremony, said reverting the historic name was an important step in the culture of Queensland. Mm-hmm. Quote, what a lot of people don't understand or don't realise is the term Fraser Island is really quite offensive to a lot of the traditional owners.
And rightly so, too.
Yeah. For many years, they have been advocating for the name change, so it was a significant moment. This was one of those things that I was totally oblivious to. So, apparently, Fraser Island was named after
Eliza Fraser,
the wife of Captain James Fraser, Eliza Fraser, who was aboard, I think, the Stirling Castle ship.
That's it.
When it struck a reef hundreds of kilometres north of Gurry. So they end up launching a boat and landing on Gurry. And 11 survivors split into two groups, Eliza and her husband in the second group, and attempted to trek south, surviving on pandanus and berries until they reached Hook Point.
Yes.
Eliza later claimed she was captured by the Butchala. Her husband either died from starvation or from his injuries. Many other survivors of the same shipwreck later disputed Eliza's claims of capture and ill treatment. So apparently she was, I don't know, ended up falling in with the Butchala people.
Yes.
And then they've obviously, you know, given her enough food and water and taken care of her, whether or not they captured her or, you know, she just stuck around with them and they were like, here, have some food and water. No, no issue. But then later she's effectively just shat on them, right? And being like, these horrible people captured me and forced me into and living here and blah, blah, blah.
I haven't read her actual story, the memoirs that she wrote from this time, but I've read a few people who are reporting on it.
Yeah.
And it reads like a 19th century Mills and Boone romance novel, allegedly. And clearly she has fantasized the entire story. Whether that is a subliminal fantasy that, you know, she has interpreted all the things that went on through, you know, what we would expect as a middle to upper class European woman. Being stranded in this situation, which must have been extremely traumatic for
terrifying,
her.
Terrifying,
And her husband's died, and she's left with these native people that she can't communicate with. But all of the other sailors who ended up in the other group, who equally got taken on by another group of the Butchala people, who like, said, bullshit. These guys came and rescued us, and they looked after us, and eventually...
No issues.
So she just made the whole lot up. And that's the objection that the local people have had all the time is that, and because not only that, but once her story got out, it then generated it wasn't quite a massacre, but it was effectively an extermination of those people on the island.
Okay.
Not all of them were killed, but it was, we've got to get rid of people on this island. You know, well, what difference does it make whether they're on the island or on the mainland? But
yeah.
And so that's where the local people there have all, for the entire time, have objected to the use of the term Fraser Island for this place, because they say this does not represent the indigenous owners of the land.
Well, even worse than that, it was, you know, this person who, for all intents and purposes, was a bad actor, right?
Yeah.
You know, did everything for herself and threw shade at the indigenous people where it wasn't warranted. And they end up having to live on an island that they've been on for probably thousands of years, and it gets named after this, you know, piece of shit person who's just crap. No,
not only that, but they were killed and taken away from the island.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So they're just like, that blew my mind. At first, I was like, why are they changing Fraser Island's name? You know, because I had absolutely no idea about the backstory. And I'm like, oh my God, it's taken this long?
And like, the National Park, National Parks of Queensland changed the name of the National Park, which is the majority of the island, to Gurry. Earlier this year, I think it was sort of March or April, that they changed the name. So the actual formal changing of the name of the island has sort of followed from that, which is a good thing, I reckon. So,
yeah. You know, well, and
given the irony that we have so many places in Australia that use Indigenous names,
more and more do this. Yeah.
Yeah. You look at it and go, why aren't we reverting to the Indigenous names when they are known and they have been in continuous use all the way along? Pronunciation aside, I think that's it's a good thing that we're actually using the original names for these places.
And particularly
a place where this is such a famous place. It's a World Heritage Area, and we only have two or three of them in Australia. It's a World Heritage Area. You've been there. It's an amazing place.
You describe it. I went there with you. What, I would have been 12?
It was 2000.
Yeah, okay. I would have been 12, 13 years old, and we ended up 13, doing a four-wheel driving trip there. Yeah. And this is one of the places in Australia where you will find the most purebred dingoes in the wild, because they're obviously stranded on this island.
Arguably the only ones that are left, because they're isolated on the island. Everywhere else in Australia, there's intermingling. and for a long time, it had been illegal to have dogs on the island. There hasn't been a long-term interbreeding of dingoes and human created breeds of dogs. So.
Well, and this was before any children had died on the island as a result of the dingoes that
I think there might have been a couple, but there've been a lot more since, because I think the population of dingoes has increased, the number of visitors there has increased, and so you throw those two things together, then the interactions between humans and dingoes is going to increase.
Well, I think people aren't just, and they're just not aware.
Dingoes are scavengers.
So. People aren't aware of the fact that these are wild dogs and that they're going to be opportunistic. And if they find, a child on their own that's a toddler or something, or a baby, there's a story that was on, I don't know if it was A Current Affair or not, 60 Minutes or something, but it was one of these couples that had gone there and left their baby in the caravan or the tent, and the dingoes just opened the tent and were pulling the baby out of the tent when they got there and were like, whoa, what the hell are you doing?
But, for them, it's just a small animal.
That's it. Why would you not? Yeah, exactly. But there have been some tragic deaths on there. Coming back to Eliza, the last thing that sort of put the nail in the coffin for me with her was here. Eliza later secretly married another sea captain, Captain Alexander Green, in Sydney, and they both returned to England aboard his ship, the Mediterranean Packet. Controversy followed when she appeared before the Lord Mayor of London to request that a charity appeal to be set up for her three children, as she was left penniless after her husband had died, previous husband, not mentioning the fact that she'd been married to Captain Green, or that she'd already received £400 in Sydney by a fund that had been set up to help her and her kids.
Yeah.
And then she sensationalized all the accounts of her experience, which were published in London.
Yeah.
And it's one of those irritating things. This happens quite a lot, I've found, and we'll probably talk about this in the next story about, I think it's Tom Wills, right?
Yes.
Where a lot of the time back then in the 1800s, the English, especially those in London, in the media, in the press, went nuts for stories about people interacting with Indigenous people.
Yeah, well, it was,
and
the adventure
they usually
thing
of- blew them way out of proportion. I think that William Buckley, who got lost, or who got lost, who ends up running away as a convict in, I think it's 1803.
1803, yeah.
In, what was he on, Portsea side of the bay here, yeah, in Victoria.
Sorry, on the Mornington Peninsula, and ended up on the Bellarine Peninsula.
He ends up with the Wathaurong and stays with them for 35 years and, you know, then finally ends up coming back into Western society and then going back to Great Britain, tells his story. But I think it gets published in the newspaper and then all these accounts of cannibalism and all this other crap ends up in there. And
say any of this.
Yeah, he was like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah. And so it is crazy to see how much that historians today in particular have to read this and always take it with a grain of salt and be like, a lot of it we have to just kind of take out of it what we can in terms of places. And
well, it was the fantasy of the exotic. And this is, you got to remember, in the 19th century, this is at the same time as zoos started to appear in Europe.
Yeah.
Originally, they were private zoos. Just, you know, very wealthy people would go out collecting animals or have them collected on their behalf and bring them back. And then they became public zoos. And it was as I said, the fantasy of the exotic, you know, being able to see. And, yeah, can you imagine if you'd grown up in central London, yeah, in the streets of London for your entire life, and you go to a zoo and you see an elephant?
It's just,
and then the stories around that, you know, the elephant looks fearsome and everything, and gorillas, which are about the most passive animals on earth, became the King Kong myth. This was all about, you know, fantasizing the adventure, and it always had to be dangerous, and indigenous people always had to be headhunters and cannibals. There was never any of this, oh, well, they just looked after me, and then a few months later somebody found me and I went back to, you know, to civilization, whatever that means. There was the temptation both from the audience and the author to go to the extreme.
Mm-hmm. So, this is original clickbait.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, you want to sell your story? What's your story? What's the better story?
Sprinkle
here?
Some cannibalism in there. Exactly. Put some cannibalism
what's the better,
in there.
What's the better story?
The last thing I guess I wanted to end this episode on was talking about the fact that Gurry is derived from a Dreamtime creation story. And the following comes from Fraser-Tours.com. The name is derived from an Aboriginal Dreamtime story about a goddess named Gurry who fell in love with the earth and never wanted to leave. According to the story, the gods set out to find a place for humans to live who had newly been created. Gurry, alongside Yen Jingi, the messenger of the great god Beryl, was sent down to earth to find such a place. But Gurry herself fell so in love, she never wanted to leave. Maybe she then changed herself into the Great Sand Island so that she could stay on her beloved earth forever. Beryl placed lakes, forests, flowers, animals, birds, and people there to keep her company. So, pretty touching story. Much better one than calling it Fraser Island.
Yeah, exactly. And it is paradise, and the word now means paradise in the local language. So, and it is. It's an incredible place.
Yeah, it's insane. I remember when we went there were quite a few of these streams, right, with just crystal clear water that you could kind of line and float down.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, really beautiful.
This is water that's been filtered through sand dunes for 1,000 years by the time it pops out again and heads out to sea. So,
yeah. Insane. Anyway, let's finish up there, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Peace. Alrighty, you mob. Thank you so much for listening to or watching this episode of The Goss. If you would like to watch the video, if you're currently listening to it and not watching it, you can do so on the Aussie English channel on YouTube. You'll be able to subscribe to that. Just search Aussie English on YouTube. And if you're watching this and not listening to it, you can check this episode out also on the Aussie English podcast, which you can find via my free Aussie English podcast application on both Android and iPhone. You can download that for free, or you can find it via any other good podcast app that you've got on your phone, Spotify, podcasts from iTunes, Stitcher, whatever it is. I'm your host, Pete. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you have a ripper of a day, and I will see you next time. Peace.